Okay, imagine this. Just try and picture it. Two absolutely vast armies stretching out further than you can see, banners flying, weapons, catching the morning sun.
Yeah.
The air's thick, you know, conch shells ready to sound the start of this massive war. But right there, in the middle of it all, there's one warrior, Arjun, the best archer there is.
Mm-hmm.
And he's trembling, but it's not. It's not fear of the fight, exactly. It's the horror of realizing he's about to fight his own family, his teachers.
And his own people.
Exactly. Welcome, everyone, to The Deep Dive. We're the podcast where we really get into fascinating ideas, try and see how old wisdom sheds light on, well, on us today.
Right.
And today, we are diving deep, really deep, into the ancient Indian epic, the Mahabharata. But, and this is key, we're not looking at it just as history or some old myth.
No, not at all. What's so compelling here and what we really want to explore is how the Mahabharata isn't just a story. It functions more like a profound mirror. Yeah, reflecting the deepest parts of our own minds, our own psyche. So our mission, if you like, for this deep dive is to unpack how its characters, these big conflicts, even the battlefield itself, how they're actually an intricate map.
A map of what?
A map of the war that's going on inside each of us right now, every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that constant battle between our better judgment and our impulses.
Mm-hmm.
It's all happening right here in our consciousness.
Okay, so if you've ever felt, I don't know, stuck, overwhelmed by choices, or if you recognize that feeling, that internal tug of war, maybe battling your own, well, your own inner demons,
mm-hmm.
then this deep dive is absolutely for you. We're going to try and show how this ancient text, thousands of years old, can actually give you some surprising clarity, insights for your struggles right now.
It really offers a path to understanding yourself better.
Self-mastery, even.
Okay, let's really unpack that opening moment you mentioned. It's critical, isn't it? It sets the stage for everything.
Absolutely pivotal. So the battlefield is Kukshetra, huge, dusty plain, packed with warriors. Dawn's breaking, weapons are glinting. Arjun, the master archer, he's there in his chariot, ready to go.
All set for this monumental clash.
But then something shifts. He just stops. He freezes. This profound paralysis hits him. And his bow, the Gandiva, this legendary divine weapon.
His symbol of strength and duty.
Right. It just slips from his hands, clatters onto the floor of the chariot. And it's not the size of the enemy army that gets him. It's something much deeper.
It's intensely personal.
He looks across the battlefield at the opposing army. And he doesn't just see enemies, he sees faces. Faces he knows. People he loves. People he respects deeply.
Like Dronacharya, his teacher.
Yeah.
Bhishma, his grandfather.
Yeah, the man who practically raised him. And his cousins, the Kauravas, guys he grew up with, played with. It's devastating.
You can just imagine the emotional flood.
Totally. Sorrow. Just overwhelming sorrow at the thought of killing them. Fear, too, not just of dying, but of the karma, the spiritual consequences of this slaughter.
And shame. Surely. Shame if fighting your own blood.
Exactly. His hands are shaking, his voice is choked up, and he turns to Krishna, who's driving his chariot, his guide, his friend, and he whispers, I can't fight.
These aren't just enemies. They're my family, my teachers, my blood.
How could I possibly kill them for a kingdom? It's just raw despair.
And this isn't just, you know, a soldier losing his nerve for a second.
No, no, it's way deeper than that. It's this universal conflict, isn't it? Duty versus attachment. What society expects versus what your heart feels. Righteousness versus sentiment.
His enemies are woven into his very identity.
Yeah. The emotional storm inside him must be immense. Grief, fear, spiritual dread. And him dropping the Gandiva, that's not weakness, is it? It feels symbolic.
Highly symbolic. It's like those moments in our own lives, maybe, when we drop our usual defenses, our competence masks, and just face that raw vulnerability, when the path ahead feels unbearable.
Right, when the conflict is just too personal.
And that's where Krishna comes in. And his response is, well, it's fascinating. It's where the story really starts to mirror our own inner lives.
Okay, so what does Krishna do? Does he tell him to toughen up? Pull himself together?
Not at all. He doesn't scold him for being weak or emotional. He doesn't just give him a lecture about duty, you know, in that conventional man-up kind of way.
So what that?
Instead, very gently, but with this incredible wisdom, he holds up a mirror. Metaphorically speaking, of course.
A mirror made of?
A mirror made of 18 chapters of profound spiritual insight, what we now call the Bhagavad Gita. But it's not reflecting the battlefield around Arjun.
Ah, okay.
No. Krishna directs Arjun's gaze and ours really inward towards the battlefield that's raging inside him.
The internal battlefield.
Exactly. He invites Arjun into this much deeper self-inquiry. He completely reframes Kurukshetra. It's not just about land or power anymore. It's the inner terrain, the human mind, the landscape of consciousness. And he tells him, quite directly, look closer, Arjun. This war. It was never really about the land or the throne. It wasn't really about them, the Kauravas, as the enemy.
So it was about...
It has always, Krishna says, at its very core, been about you.
That's quite a statement at that moment.
It's everything. That's the core message, the timeless universal insight of the Mahabharata. It shifts everything from external to internal. Instantly.
So the big war out there suddenly becomes an inner struggle.
Precisely. The enemy who seemed out there, the opposing army, suddenly becomes intimate. It's a reflection of Arjun's own inner state. His attachments, his fears, his beliefs.
Makes the ancient story feel very immediate, very personal.
It does. It becomes relevant right now to Arjun's crisis, and by extension, to us. It's this radical invitation. Stop looking outside for the cause of your suffering or the solution. Look within.
It's asking, what's the real battle you're fighting inside? The one you think is external.
Exactly that.
So, okay, bringing this home. What does this mean for you listening right now? Have you ever been in a situation, maybe a conflict at work, a family argument, a tough decision, where it felt like an external fight? But maybe deep down, or maybe looking back now, you realize the real struggle was internal. That tension between what you should do and what you wanted to do.
Or between your desire for peace and maybe fear, insecurity, those attachments that keep you stuck.
Right. Arjun's struggle, it sets the stage for us to understand those inner conflicts we all face and maybe even start to resolve them.
So if we take that idea further, Kurukshetra isn't just a place on a map in India. Symbolically, profoundly, it's the human mind.
The mind itself is the battlefield.
Yes, that sacred but often really chaotic ground where every decision gets made, where we weigh every moral choice, where that constant battle between our higher self and our lower impulses plays out.
And the key thing you're saying is that this war isn't ancient history.
Not at all. It's happening right now, always in the present moment, in the dynamic, ever-shifting landscape of your own consciousness. It's the arena where all your thoughts, desires, fears, hopes, they converge, they clash.
So like you can visualize your own mind as that vast plane.
Exactly. Picture it. All those thoughts, desires, fears, constantly moving, forming alliances, fighting silent battles, or sometimes really loud ones.
Every little choice. Do I get angry now or pause? Do I chase that pleasure or stick to my goal?
Those are the micro battles on your personal Kurukshetra, moment by moment.
Okay, this mapping idea is powerful. So Krishna, his role as the charioteer, that's more than just being the driver then.
Oh, much more. He represents your own inner wisdom, your higher intuition, that quiet, steady compass inside you that always knows the way towards truth, towards your best self.
Like that gut feeling or that little voice of reason.
Sort of, but deeper. It's that calm, abiding presence offering counsel, even when everything inside and out feels noisy and chaotic. Your innate capacity for clarity.
And what's really striking, you said, is he doesn't just fix it for Arjun. He doesn't fight the battle for him.
No, and that's a huge lesson. He doesn't force him. He guides him patiently, lovingly. He waits for Arjun to actually voice his doubts, his despair, to admit he's lost.
So the wisdom only comes when we ask. When we're ready.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
True clarity seems to arise when we're vulnerable enough to seek guidance from that deeper part of ourselves. Krishna is always there. The potential for wisdom is always there. But we have to turn towards it. We have to be ready to listen.
Which leads to the question, how often do we ignore that voice?
Exactly. How often do we silence that inner guide amidst all the noise? The ego's demands, the external pressures, the notifications, the anxiety.
It gets drowned out so easily.
It does. The Mahabharata suggests it speaks softly.
Yeah.
You need that inner quiet, that moment of introspection, of mindfulness, to actually hear it, to let it navigate your Kurukshetra.
It's about creating the space to listen to what you probably already know deep down.
Precisely. Cultivating that inner stillness.
Okay, there's another symbol the sources mention, right? The chariot itself.
Yeah.
With the five horses.
Yes. Another incredibly potent image for understanding this inner dynamic. Self-mastery in action.
So the five horses. They represent the five senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch.
That's the traditional interpretation, yes. And if they're left unbridled, uncontrolled by a conscious mind, What happens?
They just run wild, right? Chasing after every little thing that catches their attention, every pleasure, every distraction.
Exactly. They gallop towards every sense object, every illusion. They react impulsively. They pull you in a million different directions, leading to inner chaos, often regret.
And the Kauravas, the enemies, they represent those temptations, those desires that try to pull the senses off course.
They symbolize those endless desires, attachments, the external and internal forces that exploit any lapse in self-control. They feed the unchecked impulses. But Krishna holds the reins.
Ah, the reins. That's the disciplined mind.
Yes. The reins symbolize the disciplined mind, the faculty through which we can consciously guide our senses, direct them towards our purpose, and stop them from dragging us into reactivity or chasing emptiness. It's about holding your own reins.
Makes sense. Without that discipline, the senses just run rampant, like a runaway chariot.
Absolutely critical point. But the real genius of the Mahabharata, beyond these metaphors, is this intricate character map. It's like an archetypal mirror showing us every facet of our own psyche. Each major player maps onto a psychological force living within us.
No. Okay, let's unpack some of those. Duryodhan. His defining trait is just this relentless jealousy, right? Envy, greed for power.
Yes. And when we read about him, we're not just learning about some ancient prince. The sources suggest he's Arjun's and our own inner envy and jealousy.
So encountering him in the story is like confronting our own tendency to want what others have, to compare, to feel resentful about someone else's success.
Exactly. That little sting you feel when a colleague gets praised or someone's life on social media looks perfect, that's your inner Duryodhan stirring.
And the warning is, if you let that run unchecked,
it leads to self-destruction. Just like it did for Duryodhan in the epic. It blinds you, isolates you, brings ruin. It's a powerful destructive force, if not recognized and managed.
Okay. What about Shakuni, the manipulative uncle, always scheming?
Ah, Shakuni. The sources point to him as representing Arjun's our own manipulative mind. That clever, tricky part of us that justifies wrong choices, that rationalizes unethical behavior.
So it's that voice that whispers, oh, it's okay just this once, or nobody will know, or you deserve this no matter what.
Precisely. It's our inner spin doctor, twisting things to make questionable actions seem okay, even smart. It's the strategic, sometimes cynical part that finds reasons to justify things we know deep down aren't right.
We all have a bit of that, I suppose.
We all do. The key is awareness. Then there's Karna, such a tragic figure, so much potential, but
loyal to the wrong side.
Exactly. He embodies misdirected loyalty, his unwavering commitment to Duryodhan, even knowing it was wrong. It captures that pain of potential trapped by shame, by old wounds.
How so?
Well, past rejections, needing to belong, feeling like an outsider. These things can twist devotion into self-sabotage. You end up aligned with people or causes that don't serve your true self.
So that reflects our own tendencies, staying in toxic relationships, maybe, or sticking with bad habits out of some misplaced sense of duty or fear.
Yes. Often driven by unhealed wounds or a need for validation that keeps us from our real potential. We betray ourselves out of loyalty to something external that doesn't truly value us.
Heavy stuff. Okay. Dhritarashtra, the blind king. His blindness is symbolic too.
Absolutely. It reflects self-imposed ignorance.
Yeah.
Willful blindness. That refusal to see the truth because the truth is uncomfortable. It threatens our comfort zone, our ego, our power.
Like ignoring red flags, denying uncomfortable truths about ourselves or a situation.
Exactly. Staying blind because seeing would require us to change or act or confront something difficult. We put on the blinders to avoid the discomfort of reality.
We all do that sometimes, don't we?
That's a very human tendency. Then you have Vishama. Noble, strong, bound by his vows.
Seems like a good thing, right? Integrity.
It is noble, yes. But his story also shows a potential downside. How even good, rigid ideals can become a kind of bondage if they're never re-examined, if they stop us adapting.
So his vows became his prison.
In a way, yes. It reflects how our own deeply held beliefs, our principles, even past commitments, can trap us if we don't periodically check if they still serve our growth, our highest purpose, or the greater good. What was once a strength can become a limitation.
That requires real self-reflection.
It does. And Draupadi, the queen shared by the Pandavas, she's a really fascinating symbol.
What does she represent?
The sources suggest she embodies our self-image, the fire of our identity, proud, but also reactive. easily inflamed when hurt or dishonored.
So she mirrors how our ego, our sense of self, can get really defensive when wounded, leading us to lash out, demand apologies, seek vindication.
Exactly. That fiery part of our identity that feels slighted and demands respect, sometimes causing more pain in the process, that need to be seen as right or justified.
Okay. So those are some of the shadow aspects, maybe. What about the Pandavas themselves? The good guys.
Well, conversely, the five Pandavas, Yudhishthir, Bhima, Arjun, Nakula, Sahadeva, they represent our faculties, our senses, perhaps, when governed by Dharma.
Dharma meaning?
Righteous action, purpose, alignment with truth and integrity. So when our inner forces, courage, Arjun, strength, Bhima, truthfulness, Yudhishthir, compassion, Nakula, wisdom, Sahadeva, when they're guided by our higher principles,
they become allies. Tools for good.
Precisely. Our natural impulses and strengths, when consciously directed by our higher purpose, become powerful tools for navigating life with integrity and grace, not just being swept along by chaos. They represent an integrated, balanced self.
So it's not just about these individual character traits floating around inside us.
No, the whole epic, the 18-day war itself, is a metaphor.
For what?
For the ongoing process of inner transformation, our own lifelong journey. Some inner battles you win quickly. A sudden insight, maybe. A firm decision.
But others drag on.
Yes. Like breaking old habits, resolving deep conflicts, changing ingrained patterns. That can take years. And sometimes, even when you win a battle, achieve a goal, it feels hollow.
Because it didn't address the real issue.
Maybe. While other breakthroughs bring genuine peace, real growth, deeper self-understanding.
And the war ends. When?
The profound insight is, the inner war doesn't truly end when some external enemy is defeated or when all life's challenges disappear. It ends when the warrior you understands something fundamental.
Which is?
That there was never really an external enemy in the first place. Only unconscious parts of yourself. Parts that needed to be seen, understood, accepted, integrated.
So it's about inner integration, not outer conquest.
That's the heart of it. The battle for inner mastery is the real war.
Wow. Okay, so that brings up a big question for anyone listening.
Which battles in your life feel like they're just dragging on, consuming your energy? And what part of yourself, maybe a fear, an attachment, a habit, might be resisting being understood, resisting integration?
Because the mirror of the Mahabharata shows us we're everything at once.
Exactly. You are the warrior. You are the enemy you fight. You are the battlefield itself. And crucially, you are also the guide that inner Krishna capable of leading yourself to peace. It's all in there.
Okay, this is where it gets really practical, right? Where this ancient wisdom slams right into our daily lives.
Absolutely. This isn't just theory or mythology.
Because every day, you're saying, we step onto our own personal Kurukshetra, whether we know it or not. It's
right.
Not some dusty plane from thousands of years ago. It's right now. It's the office. It's scrolling through social media. It's the family dinner table.
These are the modern battlefields where our senses, our ego, our conscience, they clash constantly. Often in really subtle ways.
Okay, give us some examples. Make it concrete, like at work.
Sure. Think about a tough decision at work. Maybe choosing between a project that's easy money, but ethically iffy. Versus a harder path that aligns with your values, but maybe risks your reputation or bonus.
Okay, yeah.
In that moment, your inner Duryodhana might whisper, seeing a colleague succeed by cutting corners, why not you? Go for it.
The envy kicks in.
Right. Or your inner Shakuni starts rationalizing, it's just business, everyone does it, it's clever, really.
Yeah.
Justifying the shortcut.
And maybe your inner Dharashtra just wants to ignore the ethical red flags altogether. Pretend they aren't there.
Exactly. Choosing comfort, choosing willful blindness over confronting the uncomfortable truth. These aren't external pressures alone. They are internal voices, internal characters vying for control.
Wow. Okay, relationships too.
Definitely. That colleague who always winds you up, makes you angry or impatient.
Yeah.
Often they're not just annoying, they're acting like a mirror.
Showing me my own impatience, my own triggers.
Precisely. Showing you a part of yourself that needs looking at. Or the boss who seems unfair.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they're reflecting your own issues with authority or areas where you've given away your own power.
So it's not just them. It's my reaction to them, fueled by my inner stuff.
It's always mediated by what's inside you. In intimate relationships, think about Draupadi's fire. That wounded identity lashing out. A text message ignored suddenly becomes proof you're not valued, fueling insecurity. and maybe an over-the-top reaction.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. The conflict escalates internally before it even happens externally.
Exactly. And social media.
Yeah.
That's a huge modern Kusha trap.
Oh, yeah. The comparison trap.
Scrolling through feeds, seeing curated perfection, that pang of envy. That's Duryodhan right there on your screen, fueled by your own feelings of lack.
And maybe tweaking the truth in your own posts, making things sound better than they are.
That's your inner Shakuni, rationalizing the little manipulations for likes or validation.
And staying in online groups or following accounts that make you feel bad, but you do it anyway.
That could be your inner Karna. Misplaced loyalty to a toxic online space out of a need to belong or fear of missing out, even when you know it's harmful. The digital world just reflects our inner dynamics.
Even family stuff. That relative who knows exactly how to push your buttons.
They're not just doing it to you. They're showing you the buttons that were already installed. The old wounds, the triggers that are yours to understand and heal.
And feeling powerless in a situation.
Often reveals where you've already handed over your power, consciously or unconsciously, even just being stuck in traffic. Do you fly into a rage? That's a lower impulse. Or do you find patience? That's aligning with the higher aspect. Like Arjun after hearing Krishna, the battlefield isn't out there. It's in every breath, every choice, every heartbeat.
Okay. But it's not all negative, right? The mirror shows the good stuff too.
Absolutely. That's the beauty of it. The Mahabharata isn't just about our shadows. It's equally about revealing our potential, our light.
Our inner heroes.
Yes. It shows us the capacity for courage, wisdom, compassion that we all have. It's about recognizing and channeling that.
How so?
Well, the sources say, when you act bravely, even when you're scared, maybe having that difficult conversation, facing a challenge, you're channeling your inner Arjun, drawing strength from a deeper place. When you choose truth over comfort, even when it's hard or unpopular, sticking to your principles, that's your inner Histhir, that commitment to dharma, to integrity.
Right.
And when you manage somehow to love unconditionally, to offer forgiveness or understanding, even when you've been hurt.
That's channeling Krishna, that divine wisdom and compassion.
That's the idea. Expressing that boundless capacity for love that transcends the personal wound.
So this shifts everything. It's not about being a victim of circumstances or other people.
Exactly. It moves you into agency. You realize you don't just have one defining character trait. You contain all of them, light and shadow. Pandavas and Kauravas.
We've got the whole cast inside us.
We do. And the epic doesn't just say, okay, acknowledge it. It empowers you to consciously work with it.
So the big question isn't, which character am I?
No. The empowering question is, which character am I choosing to be in this moment, right now?
And that changes everything. Every meeting, every email, every decision, every argument.
It transforms it from just another fight or struggle into an opportunity. An opportunity for growth, for self-awareness, for consciously choosing your higher self.
It lets you navigate your personal Kurukshetra with purpose towards peace.
That's the potential. Making deliberate choices, guiding yourself towards a more integrated life.
Okay, so this whole deep dive, this idea of the Mahabharata as a mirror, seeing ourselves in the characters, it really seems to boil down to one core thing, doesn't it?
It really does. It leads us to a central powerful truth.
Right.
A truth that's been around for millennia, perfectly captured in a single verse from the Bhagavad Gita.
Chapter 6, verse 5, you mentioned.
That's the one. And this shlok, this verse, it speaks directly to this theme of the mirror, focusing on the ultimate reflection, the mind itself. It's like the master key to navigating this inner battlefield.
Okay, let's hear it.
Sure. First, in the original Sanskrit, which has such a resonance. And you had a duchikar, Ubin Churma Kaniska Hal. It's no shiloda se kagan cano fellow in the south, Pilaganka come at you, Shiroki clan capo, pocket pedicus and but campana.
Okay. And the translation?
Simple, but incredibly profound. One who has conquered the mind is the friend of the self, but for one who has failed to do so, the mind remains its own worst enemy.
Wow. Straightforward. The mind is either your best friend or your worst enemy.
Stark, isn't it? And if we tie this back to our whole discussion, this verse identifies the ultimate mirror, the ultimate battlefield, and the ultimate potential ally, your own mind.
It's both the arena and the general calling the shots.
Exactly. It's where Duryodhana's envy and Shakuni's cunning play out, but it's also the commander that dictates how you respond, where you end up. A powerful duality.
So the mind, when it's out of control, just creates its own problems, its own suffering.
Absolutely. Think about Arjun at the beginning, his paralysis, his despair. It came from an undisciplined mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
Clouded by attachment, guilt, fear.
Yeah.
Krishna's whole teaching, those 18 chapters, is aimed squarely at helping Arjun conquer his own mind.
To turn it from an enemy causing indecision and pain.
Into a friend. A source of clarity, determination, and right action. The battle isn't against his cousins, ultimately. It's the battle for his own inner command center.
So this verse is telling us that self-mastery, mastering the mind, is the most important thing.
It's paramount. Victory on your personal Kurukshetra doesn't start with changing the world outside.
Yeah.
It starts when you learn to govern your own thoughts, your own impulses, when you stop just reacting.
It's about taking responsibility for your inner state, not just blaming circumstances.
Right. When your mind is disciplined, aligned with your higher wisdom, consciously your ally, instead of just running on autopilot, it becomes this incredible asset, a steadfast friend guiding you through life's challenges with resilience, not creating more chaos.
It's the difference between being tossed around by life and actually steering your own chariot.
Beautifully put. You become the charioteer of your own destiny, guided by your inner Krishna.
Okay, so let's pause on that for everyone listening. Just reflect for a moment. How often do you let your own mind sabotage you?
Mm.
Maybe with that inner critic. Negative self-talk. Endless worry loops.
Mm-hmm.
Getting stuck on attachments.
How often does your mind create obstacles that aren't actually out there, but are purely internal constructs? Invisible walls that feel totally real to you.
So the real question isn't if this happens, because it happens to all of us. It's how can you start seeing your mind differently?
Not as this fixed thing you can't control, but as something trainable, something you can bring into discipline, like Krishna helped Arjun.
How can you start cultivating it, training it, so it becomes your greatest ally, your best friend, guiding you towards peace and potential, instead of tripping you up all the time?
That's the invitation of the shlok. #tagcatarotra.
All right, so let's try and wrap up this deep dive to recap the main threads. The Mahabharata, this incredible ancient epic, it's not just some old story, it's alive, it's a mirror.
A powerful mirror reflecting our own inner world, the timeless struggles, the universal human condition. It speaks to us now just as much as it did then.
And every character, from the noble Pandavas to the more challenged Kauravas, they aren't just historical figures. They embody parts of our own psyche.
Exactly. They represent those psychological forces, virtues, and shadows that are constantly at play within each of us, waiting to be recognized, understood, integrated.
And maybe the biggest takeaway, especially from that Gita verse, true victory, real success in life, isn't ultimately about beating external opponents or conquering the world.
No, it lies in mastering your own mind through awareness, through discipline, transforming it from that potential worst enemy into your most trusted friend, guiding you to inner harmony.
Okay, so as we finish up, here's a final thought, maybe something for you to chew on.
Consider this. Which character from the Mahabharata may be that aspect of yourself you tend to resist the most or judge the most harshly? The one you try to ignore or push down?
Which one are you currently avoiding facing within yourself? Is it that inner envy, the Duryodhana you don't like to admit, that manipulative Shakuni thought pattern, that Dhritarashtra-like denial, or maybe that Karna-like loyalty keeping you stuck?
And the real question is, how might you begin, maybe even today, just to acknowledge that part? Not as an enemy to be destroyed, but as a part of your consciousness, asking for understanding, asking for integration.
How can you consciously invite your own inner Krishna, that quiet wisdom within, to guide you forward, to help you make the courageous choices right now in your present moment that truly shape your life?
Because the Mahabharata isn't just about ancient stories told long ago. It's about the profound transformative choices you make right now on your own very real personal Kurukshetra.